Welcome to another episode of Book Club Appetizer. We're your hosts, Abby
and Alana. We're two self-professed book nerds from readitforward.com, bringing you the snackable podcast that's perfect for kicking off your book club meetings or enhancing your solo reading adventures.
As always, we're here to make reading more fun and to ensure that book club doesn't feel like a chore by hooking you up with exclusive author interviews and providing you ample food for thought. A little something to chew on, if you will.
Oh, I will. And since we pair each book with a fitting appetizer and cocktail, if you're looking for something to actually chew on, head over to readitforward.com/podcast and check out the appetizer and drink recipes provided to us by our friends at Tastebook.
As a nod to the main character of this month's read, a 30-year-old woman with a penchant for takeout, we're snacking on pork and lemongrass dumplings.
Warning, these things are addictive.
Yeah. And the Skyline Cocktail, a citrusy gin-based drink whose name calls to mind the book's setting of Manhattan. If you're hosting book club this month, we just crossed menu planning off your list, so you're welcome for that.
If you're tuning in to Book Club Appetizer for the first time, here's how this works. We spend each episode discussing a book we've recently loved, and then bring the author into the studio to do a quick reading and answer some questions. Before we go any further, we have to warn you. This podcast contains plot spoilers.
Yeah.
Beware.
This month, we read The Assistants by Camille Perry, which tells the story of Tina Fontana, executive assistant to media mogul Robert Barlow, the CEO of Titan Corporation. Tina is smart and savvy, but still finds herself making Robert's dinner reservations, booking his travel, and cutting up limes for mid-afternoon drinks with the other men in the office.
Tina, like many millennials just starting out in the workforce, lives in this moldy, rat-infested, one-bedroom apartment in Brooklyn and struggles to make ends meet on her tiny salary, while making staggering student loan payments for a college career that doesn't even seem to be paying off. Sound familiar?
Yeah.
Feels like we've all been there, but Tina has it extra tough because she has to work for a man who is so unfathomably rich that he treats currency like monopoly money, something to be played with.
And this is where the book gets interesting. What makes this such a page-turner is when a snafu occurs on his expense report and Tina is accidentally reimbursed in the amount of over $19,000. Which happens to be almost the exact amount she owes on her student loans, which gives her a tough decision to make.
Welcome to the dark side, Tina. She totally cashes the check, giving readers a peek into a what-if scenario that's so fun to read, right? Like, in life, most of us probably take the straight and narrow path, myself included.
Yeah.
And Tina's decision to go the other way makes readers the spectators in this daydream of what would happen if one time we did the not-so-right thing.
Right. And it all seems to be going along perfectly until she gets caught.
Amazingly, her boss and the company don't notice, but one equally clever assistant in the accounting department calls her out. So this girl, Emily, promises she won't tell anyone if Tina fudges the expense reports and pays off Emily's student loans as well. Uh-oh. Together, these two forge this deal with the devil, and an unexpected friendship, too.
Totally. It becomes sort of a Thelma and Louise situation in the best way, or, as the Hollywood Reporter called the assistants, The Devil Wears Prada meets Office Space,
I
think is the totally apt description. What Camille, the author, does so well is capture the zeitgeist of millennials, especially women, who have been told all their lives that all they need to do is work hard and get a college degree, only to find themselves floundering in unpaid internships, underpaid entry-level positions, and strangled by student debt.
Right. And, I mean, the book really is humorous, but the meat of it gets at some issues that plague every young person who's just starting out.
Yeah.
She really captures this new breed of working girl. And one thing that's cool about the author, fun fact, is that she herself was an assistant to the editor-in-chief at Esquire, so she knows from experience how tough it is.
Yes, and after that, Camille was the books editor at Cosmopolitan, and earlier she was a fiction reader for the Paris Review, and she has a master's in library science and was a librarian on Long Island for a while.
Huh.
So she is definitely a book lover at heart, just like us.
Yeah.
And apart from books, another thing that Camille and I bonded over in our interview were our early jobs. I was also an assistant to an editor-in-chief at a magazine, so I couldn't put this book down, in part just because I felt like I totally got it.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I wasn't an assistant to an editor-in-chief, but I still get it, right? Because we all have to start out somewhere.
Exactly.
This book makes a great graduation gift. Okay. Anyway, so in conclusion, The Assistants really is this witty, tongue-in-cheek look at career culture. And Tina, the main character, is just such a complex and interesting woman.
She's totally a discussion-provoking character. So was she evil? Was she right in doing what she did?
Before we let you get to your discussion, stay with us, because when we come back, author Camille Perry will join Abby in the studio and give us some more insight into her writing process and the inspiration behind her debut novel.
Hi, welcome to Book Club Appetizer. I'm here with Camille Perry, the author of The Assistants. Welcome, Camille.
Thank you for having me.
So, okay. Tina Fontana is a total badass modern-day Robin Hood. She's stealing from the ultra-rich to help young assistants pay off their student loan debt. Is that how you pictured her as you were writing?
Tina is, I think of her as a class hero. She's definitely not someone who starts off as someone you would think would be a hero in any regard. But through the course of the novel, she gets there.
Yeah, and she is educated, she's smart and shrewd. This young woman, she gets ignored by the powerful men at that make up Titan, but she masterminds this plan that actually sort of brings the company to its knees. What is it about revenge stories that makes them so irresistible?
I think most of us would not do those things in real life, which is the fantasy element. But we think about it. I think getting to watch that play out in your mind in a piece of fiction is really satisfying, because you can almost experience it as if you've done it without having to do it.
Right. It's like the choose your own adventure that you actually don't have to live out.
Exactly.
And so I know in my heart of hearts that stealing is wrong. But to me, Tina was such a hero. I was cheering her corporate bailout of assistants so much that I had to actually remind myself that she was breaking the law. And I liked that you sort of almost left her crime in this ambiguous place. Was that a conscious choice?
Yes, definitely a conscious choice. I wanted her to be sympathetic, obviously, and I wanted the reader to be able to empathize with her. But I didn't really want her to be an anti-hero, you know. I wanted it to be just vague enough, or not vague, but just kind of morally vague enough that I really wanted people to wonder about what they would do if they were put in the exact same position. So, like, when this money falls into her lap, she can't really put a face to it, because it's corporate money. It's the Titan Corporation's money. No one's really going to be hurt, you know, if she takes it, and it would change her life. It would pay off her student loans. It would be a life changer for her. I think a lot of us, when put in that position, would really struggle. You know, the most honest of us would struggle with that.
Right. Like, there's not, it's sort of a victimless crime.
Yeah.
And it would be very tempting. I was definitely siding with her throughout.
That's good.
The book. Yeah. And so between issues of corporate greed, income inequality, and student loan debt, that this book actually addresses so many of the subjects that our presidential candidates have to address. So did you set out to write a political book?
I did set out to write a political book. The original versions of this book were way more political than it turned out to be. They were way more militant. I think I started off writing this book from a place of, like, frustration, and so it was a way for me to channel some of that onto the page. But through the course of writing it and rewriting it and rewriting it over and over again, I realized that it was more effective to make it a little bit less overtly political and more just a more fun read. where the political stuff was just kind of gravy to the rest of the story.
Right, because, you know, we watch all of these speeches and, you know, here is a place where this actually affects our lives. You know, you and I are both 20, early 30-something former assistants ourselves.
Yes, we are.
So, you know, the fact that it resonated with me. But this is really where our experience with income inequality and class warfare really comes to light. So it takes these nebulous topics that maybe are talked about on the podium and really makes it applicable to the people we know.
Absolutely. And I think that it's great that it's been such a huge part of this campaign. Both Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton have both made paying for a student, paying for a college education a major tenet of their campaign. And I think that's great. I think people are recognizing that there's a student debt crisis happening. And I think it's important for our entertainment and our fiction to reflect that. So I hope it, in addition to being a lot of fun to read, people will think about the issues, too, that the book brings up.
So you were the assistant to David Granger, who's the editor-in-chief at Esquire.
Yes.
How much of the plot is rooted in truth of things that you saw personally as an assistant?
Well, I should say, I need to go on the record and say, it's not based on David. There are a few characteristic things about the character that are very much David Granger, if you know him, mostly the more honorable ones. But a lot of the fun stuff in there is stuff that I actually encountered as an assistant. I mean, I was you know, getting older as an assistant, and you know, I had a master's degree, and I was cutting limes for, you know, Tuesday night drinks with the staff and stuff like that, and it could get you down. It could get you down after a while. But I think that's true of anyone who's an assistant. It's part of the job. You know, you have great access and you get to do some incredible work, but you also have administrative duties. And I used to order lunch and I've done it all. Most of the things in that book come from something that I personally experienced or a fellow assistant told me about that it was too good not to use.
Yeah, exactly. This story, the assistants become sort of an amalgam of all of these different tales of other assistants. But I completely agree. When I describe what it was like to be the assistant to an editor-in-chief of a magazine, I talk about you're at the bottom of the totem pole, but you have access to the top.
Yes.
So it's this weird position.
It's a very unique position. And I feel like that's why there's this assistance network, I think, even if it's unspoken mostly. Like when you find out that you meet someone who's also been an assistant to a fairly high level person, powerful person, you just get something about one another's lives. Like you have war stories. Like we are bond. You and I are. As soon as we bonded as soon as we found out we were both assistants.
Totally. So many years ago.
But it's great. It's great. It's like a sisterhood.
It is. And actually, that's, people don't know this, but the assistants are what make things happen.
Yeah.
So assistants talk to one another. That's how people get meetings and don't get meetings.
Exactly.
Yeah. So never be mean to the assistant.
Never. That would be a bad move.
I would love to have you read the prologue from The Assistants, Camille.
I will. You've probably heard of my former boss. And even if you haven't heard of him, he has influenced you. I promise. Ever watched the all-day news or seen a big blockbuster summer movie? Him. Do you read the newspaper? What about one of those glossy magazines with magenta cover lines like Dirty Talk hot enough to make his boxers combust? Him. Odds are, if you exist in the modern world, Robert owns all or a portion of the media you consume. He hovers around number 35 on the Forbes billionaire list. I was his assistant. All important men have assistants. That's the first principle I want you to remember. Do important women also have assistants? Yes, of course. But men rule the world. Still. That's the second principle I want you to remember. Men still rule the world. Not because this is some feminist manifesto, but because it's a simple fact essential to how this all started. And that's what everyone wants to know. The reporters, the bloggers, what they all want to know is how we did it. How did two little girls outsmart the most powerful man in New York? That was the Upworthy headline. I'm 30 years old. Emily's 28.
My 5'4" on tippy toes brings down the average, but Emily is a solid 6-foot-something in heels. Not so little. What Upworthy meant was powerless. A BuzzFeed story read, Modern-day Robin Hoods look more like Charlie's Angels. They photoshopped us into swimsuits and put guns in our hands. Gothamist dubbed our network the Secretary Sisterhood of Thieves, exclamation theirs. Rumors. All of it. Internet chatter. No one knows for sure what actually happened. So let me make this perfectly clear. It wasn't stealing, really. And it was almost by accident that we discovered just how much money there was out there for the taking. That's the third principle I want you to remember. There is enough money. There is so much money.
Thanks for listening, readers. We have some reader questions on our site, in addition to a link to the awesome Spotify playlist that we put together to accompany this book. All songs about, of course, Working for the Man.
Yeah, there's the appropriate tune by the Steve Miller Band, Take the Money and Run, and duh, Dolly Parton is all up in there with 9 to 5 right next to our girl Rihanna.
The Read It Forward team has suggested a few recommendations on readitforward.com/podcast. We'll be producing monthly episodes centered on fantastic books we think you should read with your book club. So when you need something new to read, come hang out with us.
And whether you've been listening to our podcast from the beginning or you're a new listener, we'd love to know what you think of our show. Take a minute and leave us a review on iTunes. We'd really appreciate it.
And don't forget to follow us on Twitter @ReadItForward and tweet about books with us. Happy reading and cheers!